The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Welcome, welcome to The Big Show. I always try to do it as loud as Dory. I just can't quite manage it. Brandi Cruz.
Well.
Thank you. Brandi Cruz filling in for my friend Dory Monson for a second week. Dory's going to be back in the new year, back and well-rested and refreshed.
We hope.
I hope. whatever happens is up to you. It doesn't impact me at all. Gosh, did you have a good Christmas, Nicole?
I did. I think, it was pretty uneventful. I had lots of family there, and we did our usual dinner and family stuff, and it was great. I just felt sorry for everyone stuck in airports everywhere.
Yeah, we might get to that up in The Big Lead. It was a rough time to be traveling. And yeah, Mike and I long ago decided that we were going to make Christmas a non-thing. And so we stay home. I mean, I'm just glad to have him not work on the weekends because the man works too much. But we just stay home and we hang out with the doggies. And the only presents we bought this year were for the dogs. We did stocking stuffers for the dogs.
I love that.
Yes. And our dog Lucky was very excited with the stuffed llama that she got. It is her new best friend.
So didn't you buy Mike's dog gifts and Mike bought your dog gifts?
Yeah, we kind of ended up. So Mike ended up getting some stuffed animals and then I ended up getting treats. And so we kind of split them amongst the dogs. But it was really nice. Super low-key Christmas. But that windstorm, the god of ice was very angry over the weekend. So we were like, well, we're not going to go anywhere anyway.
It was cold.
We're stuck. Yeah. But, you know, we also had some folks in North Bend lose power and this has been like an ongoing thing about the trees with the ice and all of that. And so there were a lot of people I was on social media over the weekend talking about losing power. But it turns out in some areas there might be a little more to that. Let's get to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
So you just heard about this in Aaron's newscast. And, you know, I don't know what to make of this because is it a coincidence? You've heard about these attacks at substations and there have been at power stations. There's been some instances across the country. We know that there was an instance in North Carolina, was it, where there people shot at a power station there. There's been some incidents in Oregon. And now there are and have been at least four attacks at power substations in Pierce County. And so on Christmas Day of all times, some folks in Pierce County, thousands of people lost power on Christmas Day. So there were four, like I said, four substations targeted by vandals. They breached the security fences. They damaged equipment. There were about 14,000 people with Tacoma Public Utilities and also Puget Sound Energy customers who ended up losing power as a result. Here again is Sergeant Darren Moss on what they found when they got there to respond to the damage.
When the deputies got there, there was nobody on scene, but they saw that the fence area had been broken into. The suspects cut one of the locks on the fence area, made their way inside and caused damage to the substation. All three happened in the middle of the night on Christmas Day, causing power outages. Nothing was stolen from either or any of those facilities. So there's a good possibility they are related.
And that's what gets me is like nothing was stolen because usually you might think, OK, maybe they went in there to steal some equipment. They had some other motivations. But it sounds like, according to Sergeant Darren Moss of the Pierce County Sheriff's Office, that this was strictly an act of vandalism. And Cairo 7 spoke to this woman who's like, yeah, I mean, there's been vandalism everywhere and not just targeted to the power stations.
You know, I think, you know, the world's in a weird place right now and you're seeing a lot of things.
And so that could be part of it. You know, is this just part of everything's being freaking vandalized? And so, yeah, add the power stations to the list. But Como spoke with a retired FBI agent because the other thing that got me about this is like, are they really that easy to get to? Can you really just break a lock and go in there and screw up power for thousands of people? And this retired FBI agent said, yeah, actually, they're pretty easy targets.
They've now determined that these are, again, easy targets. You can do a whole lot of damage with not much effort. There's going to have to be an upscaling of the security around these substations. I mean, as you well know, you've seen some of them. They're just sitting out in the middle of nowhere with a chain link fence around them. It's not going to work anymore.
No. And so, of course, they've happened across the country. And there's this whole thought about, are these attacks on the power grid? And that's the worst fear, right? And you and I were talking earlier, Nicole, and it's like, gosh, we always worry about it, this global pandemic, and then there was a pandemic, and the other thing that seems like it's just a distant threat or attacks on our power grid. now it's like, okay, is this part of that? Is this some sort of
like ramping up to it?
Ramping up, organized effort. And the Pierce County Sheriff's Office, they posted on Facebook, they said, we're obviously aware that this has happened in more places than Pierce County. We're trying not to jump to any conclusions. There's an ongoing investigation into this. The FBI won't comment on whether it's involved because the FBI, that's their standard protocol. They don't say whether they are or are not involved in investigations, which I would be very surprised if the FBI isn't involved in this investigation at this point, because Tacoma Public Utilities said, and I had reached out to them yesterday, and they were very short on words. You know, this is not something that they're talking a lot about. And they said that they are working with federal law enforcement officials to investigate the attack. And so, I think you have to treat it as the worst case scenario, unless you find out it's a bunch of punk kids going in there. And in that case, I hope you throw the book at them.
Yeah, I've heard rumors of Antifa type of groups or whatever. But I think it's one of those. We never had to secure them better than a chain link fence because everybody was scared of them. You're like, oh, I'm not going to mess with the power station. Like, I'll get electrocuted. But now these people are like, it seems like testing what they can get away with in there without getting injured themselves or whatever.
Well, and that's part of my, if I look at, and I don't want to, like, you know, guess too much about what's happening. I understand the need to sort of hang sure. back and say, okay, let's let the investigation run its course, because it could be some punk kids in there. But if it's not, you really do have to consider worst case scenario. And that's what came to my mind, too, is you've got multiple different attacks. Nothing was stolen. And so are they trying to figure out how easy are these things to access? What kind of damage can we do without electrocuting ourselves? I think we rig those bad boys to electrocute whoever comes in. I think that we set little traps for them.
And I have heard if you live anywhere near a substation, you're supposed to check your cameras and see if you see any suspicious activity and let police know, because I don't know how many suspects they have or if they, you know, well, there's not a list coming out of suspects.
Yeah, so. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Antifa. But frankly, even if you live by a power station that has not been targeted, it might still be good to look at your cameras and see, or even, you know, train your cameras in the direction of a road or something going to it, just to see, like, is there anything unusual, anything suspicious, and maybe you can prevent one of these instances from happening. What do we do without cameras? I mean, I think there's too many cameras, frankly. I'm always like, do you ever walk around your neighborhood and you're like, I wonder how many Ring doorbells I'm showing up on today.
Oh, definitely.
All right. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Big local.
Back in February, I know Dory covered it. It's something I talked about on the Undivided podcast. Piroshki Piroshki, which is this Russian bakery in Seattle, very popular. They've got a location down at Pike Place Market. Well, they announced that they were closing their location on 3rd Avenue, which is just a couple blocks up from Pike Place. But they opened this location. And I guess part of me was like, why would you ever open a location there? But several years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, when there was some renewed efforts to clean up downtown, the city at the time promised this revitalization of downtown, that they were going to activate 3rd Avenue and, you know, make it a place where tourists wanted to go, where you could go shopping and dining. And so Olga Sagan, the owner of Piroshki Piroshki, thought, well, I want to be part of that. I'm a business owner who cares about the city, so I'm going to open up a location right on 3rd Avenue between Pike and Pine, which is like the worst block in the city. That and in front of the King County Courthouse. But at the time, she thought, okay, I'm going to be part of reinvigorating this area. But of course, crime got terrible. And then during the pandemic, everyone who was down there for legitimate purposes, like business, wasn't there. And so on this particular stretch of 3rd Avenue, which has the notorious McDonald's on it, you know, where all the shootings happen. So on this particular stretch, and I went down there in February around the time that Olga decided to close this location, and there were, I mean, you could buy just about anything. There was these open air markets of stolen merchandise, stuff that had been taken. I mean, if you wanted a cheap shark vacuum from Target, you'd get one for like $20 down on 3rd Avenue. I was tempted at certain times. I was like, wow, shark vacuum. That's nice. I might, can I buy this stolen merchandise and get away with it? But there's also just blatant drug use, blatant drug dealing, to the point where they weren't even hiding it anymore. And of course, there had been several shootings. And the final straw for Olga in February at this location was there was a shooting, another shooting down at the McDonald's, where a guy was killed. And she had her security footage outside their storefront that just showed all the people who were fleeing down the street from the shooting. And she just thought, look, if my employees aren't going to be safe, if my customers aren't going to be safe, then I have to close my doors. And I remember speaking with Olga at the time, and she was so fed up. She was so disappointed in elected leaders for letting it get that bad, in people who weren't willing to speak out about the problem. And she's like, you know what? I'm just going to shut up. I'm going to pay my taxes. I'm going to operate my other businesses, and I'm not going to worry about this one. Well, Olga on Monday decided, she said it was a Christmas miracle. She decided to reopen this location there on 3rd Avenue. And I actually stopped down there yesterday because I had she texted me over the weekend saying, hey, we're moving forward. We're going to open the day after Christmas. And so I went down there just to kind of, support the business and get a pierogi, which wasn't on my diet. But dang, it was delicious. And just chat with her. And I was really pleased to see Councilwoman Sarah Nelson, who was down there supporting the business. It's like, at least there are some members of the Seattle City Council who recognize that we need businesses to succeed in order for the city to succeed. But, downtown in that block did look significantly better than February. I mean, it's still a dump, right? There's businesses boarded up everywhere. So many businesses have closed. There are still some people using drugs in the alcoves, but it is nowhere near where it was in February. And so Olga says, you know what, we're going to try this. We're going to try to open back up. She did, however, tell Como that if they end up having to close again because of crime, then that's it.
I'm saying it officially right now on TV. If we have to close again, it's going to be a permanent closure. So we better go at it. CT better help us.
Yeah. And I don't blame her. I mean, I think she's taking a risk as it is. You know, I posted on my Facebook page when she told me we're opening back up tomorrow. And I posted that I was going to be down there and that people, if they felt comfortable, should stop by and support the business. And there were so many people saying, downtown Seattle's still terrible. I'm not going to go there. And they're right. I don't blame anyone who doesn't want to go down there. I don't blame any business that doesn't want to operate down there. It still isn't a pleasant place to be. And so I do think Olga is taking a risk. And I do think there's still a possibility that she'll have to close that location back down and it'll be for the final time. But I give her so much credit for trying to push through this, for realizing that, you know, if we just give up on downtown, then it has such a huge economic impact, not only for the city, but for the entire state. So I appreciate her, one, speaking the truth about what's happening down there, regardless of the little activists on the far left who vilify her for it. And I have a lot of respect for her for taking a chance and saying, my bakery being open on this avenue, as one of the only businesses open on this avenue, can make a difference, and I really want to try. So coming up at 12:30 on The Big Show, we're going to be joined live. We're going to be joined by Olga Sagan, the owner of Pierogi Pierogi, and we're going to talk about how she came to this decision to reopen and what her message will be for city leaders. So looking forward to that conversation. All right, coming up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top trending.
So, Nicole, I wanted to get to this. You snuck this in The Big Lead because I was thinking the same thing watching the news over the weekend, how sad it was for people stranded at the airport on Christmas.
So one story in particular, I saw Tracy Taylor, who used to do our traffic here.
Yeah.
Her birthday is also Christmas, and they were leaving for Hawaii either that morning or that evening. They were I still don't know if they made it there. I mean, they did not make it there on Christmas. I'm not sure if they've made it there as of yet. I just felt heartbroken for her.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine whose family member died a couple days before Christmas, and it was like a last minute, got to get to Georgia.
Ugh.
And of course, they get there and the flight's canceled. Of course, I was like, oh my gosh, that's the worst. There is nothing worse when it comes to travel than getting to the airport and realizing your flight has either been delayed or canceled is even better. It's the delay. This happened to us in Vegas.
Yes. And you just never know if it's going to be delayed more, if you should just give up. And especially I feel for these people who there are just lines at every desk, at every counter. And so you just feel absolutely helpless. I think it's one of the most helpless feelings that you can get, is being stuck at an airport and not knowing if you can make it out and not knowing who to contact, not knowing what to do.
And
I
you
mean,
just
it's
stay
so
there
helpless.
And you just stay there indefinitely in case they reschedule. So I saw this, I was really had mixed feelings about this. But so Sam Cho, who is a Seattle Port Commissioner, obviously there were a lot of canceled flights and stuff like that. And so he posted something. This was the 23rd. And I thought, God, that's just not a good look. So he posted on Twitter. He said, personal sanity announcement. One, yes, I know the airport is a S show, spelled out. Two, no, there's nothing I can do about it. Sue Mother Nature. Hopefully this spared you from DMing or adding me. Thank you in advance for not ruining my Christmas by making me sit and reply to you. This is a Port of Seattle commissioner.
I'll reach out to him. I think he should come on and explain that. And because is that not your job?
Well, and also, yeah, that's part of being an elected leader is, and this is what I responded to him. I said, it's part of being an elected leader. People complain, sometimes fairly, sometimes not. Do I think that Sam Cho is controlling Mother Nature? Of course not. And I really doubt that people messaging him think he controls Mother Nature.
But it's the response to Mother Nature, right? We're supposed to be prepared. We knew it was coming. Did you have enough de-icer? Did you have enough employees? Like, explain to people why you were not prepared to the appropriate extent. And I'm not sure if you could be. But right. It's explain it to people.
And even if you think it's unfair, you just have to take your licks. This is the job.
Wow.
You ran. Nobody made you run. And so I was really, really surprised by this response. You know, he could have just said, hey, I know weather's bad. Unfortunately, we can't control it. I feel so bad for all of you who are stuck trying to travel for the holidays. Instead, it was, hopefully this spared you from messaging me. Thank you in advance for not ruining my Christmas by making me sit and reply to you.
Making him.
Sir, I don't know if you should be in a position. Actually, that's pretty on par for politicians. So never mind. And that has been The Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Coming up, we're going to be joined by the owner of Piroshki, Olga Sagan, who reopened a downtown Seattle location yesterday. She's going to talk about what made her reopen, what led to that decision, and also what she would like moving forward from elected leaders. Brandi Cruz filling in for Dory Monson. A popular Seattle bakery ended up closing one of its locations in downtown Seattle. I'm sure most of you could guess why. Piroshki, which obviously has the location down at the market, but it also opened a location up on 3rd Avenue between Pike and Pine, was in the midst of this whole area where there was rampant drug dealing. There had been multiple shootings down there by that McDonald's. And there had been these open-air bazaars full of stolen merchandise from the Target. Just, it was crazy down there. I think this is back in February. So the owner, Olga Sagan, opted to close that location until things got better. And on Monday, they actually reopened their doors to try things out. Olga Sagan joins us now on The Big Show. Olga, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So I stopped down to see you yesterday when you opened, got myself a little piroshki, which was delicious, by the way. How was business yesterday on your first day reopened?
It was impressively busy, given that the building was closed. So we were only getting business from walk buyers, you know, through our window. We were very, very impressed with the amount of people that stopped by and supported us that day.
And you did get a couple city council members to stop by, right?
I sure did. The first thing in the morning, Andrew Lewis stopped by. You know, he got a piroshki. He got piroshki for his wife. And we chatted a little bit about, you know, what and why and how. And then a little bit later, and I think you saw just a glance of her, Sarah Nelson stopped by, who is a business owner herself, so she really understands it. And she almost brought me to tears when she thanked every single one of my employees who were there for being there.
Yeah, she's great. And as you mentioned, when I came down, she was already there, so I got a chance to catch up with her. And it's so nice to see people who understand why the success of business is important, and she absolutely does. And so there's some pro-business people left on the city council. Talk about the situation outside. So you and I spoke in February after you decided to close, and, you know, you'd shared some of the surveillance video that showed people, you know, doing drugs right outside your window. There had just been a shooting down there. So compare February to yesterday.
I think Right in front of our windows, there is a significant difference. I would say it's consistent 24/7, always clean and safe 100%. But I would say it's more often clean and safer than it ever been in the last 2-3 years. I do see a lot of that crowd that is doing, again, I don't think it's homeless people. I really believe those are drug users and drug dealers, yeah. Some mental illness have moved a block up and kind of to Belltown a little bit down. So it's not that people have disappeared. It's just that the area has been moved outside of our window.
Yeah, I think you characterized it to me as kind of whack-a-mole, and, you know, you get rid of them in one location and then they just go to another. I mean, I still would rather the city and the police come in there and move them around than let them get too comfortable on one particular block. But at the same time, you know, when I talked to you in February, you were very fed up. And, you know, you opened at that location because there was this promise of this revitalization of Third Avenue and businesses were being encouraged to be part of that. And then we all saw what happened. Third Avenue became this absolutely almost like, I mean, end of the world scenario. It was terrible down there. So, though it's a little bit better right now, how hesitant are you to believe that it's really going to stay that way?
I would answer that I have no expectations. I hope for the best, but I have, hoped before. And I think I was very, very vocal and very, frustrated and very fed up when I closed. And then following my closure, there was so much, Starbucks closed, Amazon closed. It was just closing after closing after closing. And so I was fabric of that closing and kind of, putting our foot down that it's impossible to run a business there. And then beginning of this month, we had Uniqlo opened a block away. Mm-hmm. And I feel as I was, part of the fabric of closing it down and telling people enough is enough, I'm hoping to be a fabric of reopening it up as well and supporting everyone who cares and everyone who sees that there are movements. And hopefully we'll just continue keep pushing towards, a better future for Third and Pike.
Well, I'm glad that you're willing to be a part of it, even if it comes at the expense of being very, very frustrated at times with the city of Seattle. When it comes to being outspoken, you have been, and bless you for being outspoken, you've said what's on your mind. You've criticized the city, and you've pointed out, frankly, Olga, the obvious, which is I wish everybody would be willing to point out the obvious about how bad things had gotten downtown, but for some reason that's considered brave or dangerous to do. But have you seen a shift in the willingness of business owners down there to finally speak up and say something?
I feel that there has been. I feel that, and as you know, I got a lot of negative feedback and a lot of name calling when I came out and I said things. The good thing about it, I was telling my truth, how I seen it and what I have been affected with. So it was me, some of those people who are sitting on the couch and really blaming everyone for everything. I actually was there. I was walking the walk and talking the talk. So I still felt I had a right to say things. And I think after I said things, I think a lot more businesses started to verbalize stuff. And I think it really helped. It really opened up doors to say that we are also part of the community, business community. We're part of it. We employ people. We pay our taxes. 60% of City of Seattle income comes from businesses. So I felt like we did open a little bit of a floodgate of it's okay for us to speak our truth through different channels, through you, whatever it is, Fox, Como, it's just at the end of the day saying what is happening.
Well, and I'll never understand why someone like you, a productive business owner in Seattle of a beloved bakery, would be vilified for just saying, like you said, the truth. that it's not acceptable, the state of downtown. And the fact that there would be this activist class in Seattle that would try to vilify you and demonize you for doing that just says so much about the city. And I think the more and more people who are willing to speak up and not concern themselves with what those fringe activists might say, the better. Olga, let me ask you this. I know you've vocalized to me on several occasions that, you know, the number one thing is the safety of your staff and the safety of your customers. Are you worried you'll have to close down again? And what happens if it gets to that point?
I am going to officially say it, and I said it again, and you can write it down. If I close down again, it's going to be a permanent closure. If I have to close down again due to safety concern for my employees or my customers, this will be a permanent closure. I will break my lease, and I will be done with that location. Because I feel at that point, you know, it's doing the same thing, expecting different results, which I'm kind of already doing right now. And I hope that everyone can hear it loud and clear who cares about this, we have to deliver a good walkable downtown for our people. Downtown now is the biggest neighborhood in Seattle. Downtown, people who live there, people who work there, tourists that visit us, we need to stop embarrassing ourselves with downtown like this.
That's so well put. And it is embarrassing. And I think anyone, you know, we had on, I was filling in for Dory last week, and we had on the owner of Beacon Plumbing, who's been in Seattle his whole life. I mean, a very high profile business similar to yours. And he said, look, this, when I speak poorly of Seattle, it's from a place of love. And I think anyone who truly loves the city should be angry about the state of downtown, because as you said, it is embarrassing, and the city has been better and it can be better. Well, Olga, let's end with this. What's your message to city leaders as you reopen this week for the first time in, 9 months?
10 months, yes. I think my message is as I was, you know, vocal closing it, I am as vocal reopening it, and I hope that they will take it as a sign that there are a lot of business owners still in Seattle who believe in the city, who wants it to succeed, and we need help and support. We need more open doors. We need more activation in that area, and I hope to get the support of everyone, all the stakeholders in this community.
All right, Olga Sagan, the owner of Piroshki Piroshki. They've now reopened their location on 3rd Avenue. It's between Pike and Pine. If you care to stop by and support her in their reopening and support their employees. Olga, thank you so much, and thank you for being willing to say what a lot of people are not brave enough to say.
Thank you.
Much more ahead on the Dory Monson Show. Brandi Crews filling in. Music for the Dory Monson Show. I don't know I'm ready for that amount of hip. How old are you, Andrew?
I'm 24.
All right, there it is. That's why.
I don't mind it.
No, I don't mind
it. Okay. Well, I don't really have any more Christmas music to play. So what do you?
Well, no, Christmas is over.
Music? I know.
I don't mind it. I like it. It's just very hip, you know. I'm kind of an old lady trapped in this body. So you know, I like my what's hip. I like my Lana Del Rey. Okay, that's hip, right?
That's hip.
You know, Amy Winehouse and Adele. That's sort of my vibe. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. Brandi Crews filling in.
Andrew Silent. All right, I'll work it in.
No, I don't mind this music. I just, you know, he's so young, and it just shows in the musical selections. It was funny, though. You said you're out of Christmas music, so we're in here during the break. And some staff from Cairo Radio are in, tearing down the Christmas decor. Remember when I started filling in for Dory last week, I was complimenting how nice all the Christmas decor in here looked, and you guys don't mess around here at Cairo. It was like, Christmas is done.
Yep.
All the garland and tinsel and lights and the cute little deer you guys had in here, gone.
Done, and it's gone from the front desk area. Oh. It's gone from outside. I know.
See, I like to, I don't know if you guys, if Stretch. You were listening last week, which I know you guys always listen to the Dory Monson Show, even on a holiday week, I was talking about how my mother one year kept the Christmas tree, it was a fake tree, up the entire year and redecorated it for like different holidays, like 4th of July, back to school, Valentine's Day.
I think the genius of that was just to do it the 1 year. Because if you thought every year, it would get old and, you know.
It's a little much.
But just the 1 year to be like, I'm doing it this year.
Yeah, well, apparently no more Christmas joy here. It's all gone. Speaking of no Christmas joy, did you see the story of the migrant busing on Christmas Eve? So, you know, this busing has been happening. I've been clear. I think I've talked about it on Dory's show before. I don't like the migrant busing. I don't like that it's necessary. I don't like human beings used as political pawns. That being said, I don't blame Texas and Arizona and the border states. You have these, and this is what, you know, when these migrants are bused to New York City or bused to Washington, D.C. or Martha's Vineyard and they complain, oh, we're not ready for them. Do you really think the tiny border towns of population 1,000 are ready for them? Do you think they're ready for tens of thousands of people who pour across the border every week? Of course not. And so I understand what they're trying to do with the busing and trying to bring that issue front and center in sanctuary jurisdictions, literally dropping migrants off at the door of the president or the vice president. I get it. I just don't like it. That doesn't mean I have to like it. So anyway, on Christmas Eve, Texas Governor Greg Abbott sends to the observatory, which is the home of the vice president in Washington, D.C., buses full of migrants. And it really ticked off CNN and the like because the White House had this blistering statement calling it cruel because, one, it was Christmas Eve, and two, it was like 15 degrees out. It was one of the coldest Christmas Eves they've had on record in Washington, D.C. Again, I get that. That being said, I mean, these migrants were clearly making the journey around Christmas time. So if you feel bad for them that they're being bused on Christmas Eve, I mean, they're the ones who made that journey leading up to the holidays in the middle of the winter. And by the way, you know, I've spent some time on the border briefly, and I promise you, at night, the Rio Grande is also very cold. And so for these migrants who are literally wading across the Rio Grande, I don't care if it's the dead of summer, in the middle of the night, it's also very cold. So if you think that this last leg of their journey, being bused in front of the home of the vice president, was the worst part of their journey, I can promise you that it probably was not. So if you're going to be someone who's outraged over this busing on Christmas Eve, I hope you are just as outraged at the treacherous, often deadly journey that these migrants are taking because they know that when they get to the border, they're going to be allowed in. So let's do away with the selective outrage. If you care about the migrants, then you shouldn't want them taking that journey in the first place. But here's sort of where I'm at with this whole crisis and this whole issue. It's the fault of the two-party system. I mean, I've been very vocal that I'm not a big fan of Democrats or Republicans. And you look at what's happening at the border, and it's a perfect example. You have these two parties. They either only look at it as a humanitarian issue, or they only look at it as a national security issue, when very clearly for those of us with common sense, it is both, and it needs to be addressed as both. I mean, part of the beauty of this country is that we have laws that allow people to seek asylum here if they are fleeing from some unbelievable situation in their home country. And we should celebrate that. We should want people to come in and to seek asylum if they qualify and if it's necessary. But at the same time, you cannot ignore the national security element of this. And I feel like Democrats do, by and large, and then Republicans on the flip side, they're like, oh, security crisis, and then they kind of ignore the true humanitarian crisis. And I just think as long as the two-party system is in play, all they care about is scoring political points, and if they can't win a political point, then they're sure as heck not going to help these migrants, they're sure as heck not going to stop the border security crisis, and they're not going to do anything, because all they care about is winning elections. If they cared about anything else, the border crisis would be a heck of a lot better than it is right now. And it's really just sad to me that we've gotten to the point where, you know, I was watching CNN and they're like, oh, look at this cruel act of busing migrants on Christmas Eve. And they totally ignore the root cause of the problem. And they refuse to hold Democrats accountable for not making significant progress on this issue and for actually making it a lot worse on the southern border. So the two-party system is so selfish in the way that they operate that I don't trust them to deal with any problem at all. And yes, I do blame both sides. I know that's both sidesism. And I want to talk about later on in the show, Nicole, if we can fit it in, there was this massive drug bust in King County where they seized, and they say it is cartel, 500,000 fentanyl pills, each and every one of them with the capability of killing a Washingtonian.
Yeah, do you hear Governor Jay Inslee speaking out about the border crisis, saying we need to secure the border, we need to stop these cartel from coming in? No. He cares about kids in cages or whatever it is. Meanwhile, these pills and drugs coming up from Mexico are literally killing people in his state. We'll talk about that and much more ahead. Fastest 15 coming up on the Dori Monson Show. Brandi Crews filling in.